Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, it's Yas here, and I'm calling today with a little favour to ask. Over the recent weeks and months, I've had loads of you get in touch with some great questions, and today I'm going to be trying something new with the show. I'm trialling a Q&A segment where I'll be joined by co-host and elite coach educator, Gerard Jones. Now, these are discussions which are going to be taking place every Sunday evening at 7:30 GMT, live on Twitter Space, if you wanted to get involved directly. Otherwise, I'll be releasing them here every Wednesday on the Coaches Network podcast. So for today's format, slightly different, and for around about 30 minutes, each discussion will be dedicated to a question that has been sent in, where myself and Gerard will be going into some real depth and sharing our views and opinions on the topic in order to leave you with some key takeaways to consider in your own environments. So the favour I'm asking for today, guys, is if you could let me know your thoughts on the new format, and you can do this by getting in touch on Twitter at TheCoachesNet. Once again, that is at TheCoachesNet. And of course, if you have a question, feel free to send that in too. Hope you enjoy the new format.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach, coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. We'll dive straight in. Creating a game model, obviously part three of the series that we've kind of put together around developing a game model. In week one, I think we spoke about what is a game model. Last week, we spoke about the influences on the game model. So maybe just worth tying back some key takeaways on those, in that fundamentally will inform how you go about creating it.
Yeah, I mean, the big ones that we spoke about before, right, was the having an understanding of the players and where they're at, who are you working with, the context of who's in front of you. Recruitment's a big one, right? We gave reference to top-level examples, whether you're Guardiola and you're working and you've got access to a Haaland and some of the top players in the world, and how that might change your game model compared to previous. Or we gave some examples even at the grassroots level. We also talked about, you know, culture and, again, coaches' experiences, whether they've worked in different countries. I'm fortunate to have seen football in Africa, in Europe, now in the US, some other continents as well, Oceania. And it, you know, it is different, and it just gives you wider experiences. So there were some of the takeaways. We talked about coaching language and how coaches view the game, and that influence on the game model itself, even just the principles apply and how they apply. So, yeah, there were sort of some of the ones that fall to mind. What were your key messages?
Yeah, I think not too dissimilar. I think it's just understanding that, for me, you can have your game model, but the game model is just a preference on how you want a team to play, and it shouldn't be the be-all and end-all, because fundamentally the game's still based on those principles that you referred to. And, you know, the objective of those principles, fairly simple: try to stop goals or score them, or stop, try to stop goals from being scored or score them without being stopped. So I think when you strip it right back, you can have a preference of how you want to play, but actually the game will dictate what you're fundamentally going to look to do in order to gain success in your in every moment of it, right? So I think that's probably the biggest one for me. Plus the ones that you've kind of touched on in understanding the differences around, or what, you know, the influence of your game model. Your players might be of a certain level, therefore you're going to have to switch how you want to play. It doesn't mean that you can't work towards developing them the way that you want to, but actually part of the game model piece, and I'm sure we'll unpack it more as we go in here, is understanding, well, what are the profiles and what are the roles and responsibilities and the characteristics you need for your game model to even be functional and operational. So, yeah, but I'm sure we'll unpack it. So straight over to you now. If we're looking at developing a game model and creating one, where do we begin?
Well, yeah, and I just want to build on what you said even earlier. So I think it's fascinating, because the game model is a framework, right, of our principles. And it really defines how we view the game across the different moments of the game. So if we're talking about creating a game model, there's no real right one place to start, but probably a good place is, have you got clarity on how you want to play? So what is your game idea, your identity, your style of play? How do you view the game, right? So, you know, if someone asked me what influenced me in creating the game models that I've done in Morocco and now in my role here and in some of our clubs, I've always looked at, well, what makes us a, when I worked in the DTM in Morocco, what's the Moroccan way? What does a Moroccan player look like? What do Moroccan teams look like? What's our identity? What do we want it to be? You know, I look at some clubs from Yorkshire and they'll talk about phrases like outfight, outplay, outrun. They're like non-negotiables. And I do think that has a huge part on it, because as a coach, what's your lens? So how you view the game. So I view the game, I want our teams to play exciting and entertaining, effective, possession-based approach where we're utilising possession to be unpredictable and score more goals than the opposition. And in doing so, we're able to adapt to changing circumstances, right? So you've got that ability to play in the future. But I like the exciting, I like the effective possession-based approach, because what that implies is that there's not a purist to it, or we can only play out this way. Well, no, if Yaz is through on goal, or Yaz is the best option for us to go forward with the ball, give the ball to Yaz. So for me, sorry, you might have lost me there a little bit. I was saying that, you know, how do we play forward quickly? How do we look to utilize possession? That's important. Now, because of that, that influences how I create a game model, because I would say that then you're looking at it as, well, what do we want our team to look like across the moments of the game? So when we've got the ball, when we haven't got the ball. So creating a game model, you've got to think about in possession, out of possession, transition in between, and then, of course, set pieces and restarts. Restarts is an interesting one because, you know, like kickoffs, it's probably underutilized. It's probably a forgotten set piece in a lot of sense because we take for granted what we do on a kickoff. But it's an important part of the game when we have the ball from a throw-in or whatever. Then once you've defined these moments, you can start to think about, okay, well, what are the principles that would exist that don't change? Now, the key is the label. The words that we use, the language, the vocabulary, that's important because it has to be something that's understood by the players as well as the coaches across every aspect within the team. So if I'm using the word counter-pressing and you're saying counter-pressing, are we talking about the same thing? Because we might think we are because we're using the same word, but we could actually be describing something completely different. Do you see what I mean? And that's an example, you know, I've shared before. And I think when you're creating your game model, you've got to have your framework of these moments and then the principles that exist within the moment. So if it's attacking, how do you want to play? Well, we want to break lines. Okay, so that could be a principle. So how do you break lines? So what's the purpose of breaking lines? Well, the purpose is we want to advance the ball. We want to play forward. Okay, so if we want to play forward and progress forward, how do we do that? Well, now the sub-principle is you can play through, around, or over, right? Okay, well, how do you do that? So you go into layers. So is it engaging opponent 1v1 or 1v2? Is it attacking space, driving into space? Is it through a pass to eliminate players? Is it the optimal distances where you're playing between or around lines and you've got that optimal attacking shape? What is it? So now you're going into your details, right? And then there's different ways to play forward. How do you find the free player? How do you finish the attack? How do you switch play? How do you change the point of attack? How do you So these are your principles. And then people might call them different things. I've been fortunate to see so many game models, and I've worked with so many different federations where they've all got their own, and similar in a lot of ways and very different in others. And one thing that I would say that defines them all slightly differently is the language. So, you know, like, I really like Austin FC, who work in an MLS club out here. They've got a very clear game model. They use certain terms that are similar to mine, like breaking lines, but then they'll use other things where me and you, Yaz, might say, switch the point of attack or switch play or what or whatever. Like, attack on one side to change or attack onto the other or attack quickly on the other side, something like that. They'll use, like, different phrases or sentences, but they know what it means. So I think when you're creating a game model, you've got to first think about how we want to play, because then that's going to go into layers of, okay, well, then in order to achieve that objective, what is the objective when we have the ball? You know, so you can think about, like, the field in roadmaps. So if you look at the pitch, right, when you're close to your goal, when you're in the opponent's half, or when you're close to the opposition's goal, when we got the ball, or vice versa, when we haven't got the ball, in those different areas of the field, what are the objectives when we have the ball and when we don't have the ball? That's going to help you start to define what the principles are and how you would call certain principles, and then you can build from there. So sorry, there's probably a lot there, but that's where I have typically started. Doesn't mean to say that's the only way, but just to summarize, have a clear identity and a vision of how you want to play. How does that influence player behavior on the ball and off the ball? So player behavior when we're in these areas of the field and scenarios, whether it's, right, the goal is we want to do this or the goal is this. And then do that, then going into, okay, well, then when we've got the ball, this is what I would term this principle. That would be the sub-principle of that principle to achieve it. And now what you start to create is you're creating a framework of many principles when you're defending, when you're attacking. And then ultimately, that's a framework to influence behavior of decisions. So, for example, when you're defending, is it to prevent the opponents from progressing the attack? Is it to recover to shape? Is it, what are your principles? So then that way you're teaching your players how you want to play. So those would be the few things from me.
Yeah, and I think there's so much in this. I'm just trying to rack my brain on where to start, really. I think first and foremost, you know, let's go to the language. I think the language is key. Language is key because, you know, I think words are powerful. So I think it's how you articulate things is just going to be so vital to how you do everything, right? And landing the messages that you want to land. I think the important thing to understand, though, is what everyone's perception of that language is. Whether that be coaches working together, whether that be the players in the team or the people around the environment, so that everyone knows what we're going after. Now, we might have different perceptions on what those words mean, and that's fine as well. But as long as we're aligned and understood on what the collective perception and direction is, despite what our own personal viewpoints of those may be. But also, there's probably a consideration in there, right? That if everyone's perception of these words are different, can we think, you know, can we get to a point where we amend the language to suit everyone's understanding? So I think there's that part in it as well. I think in terms of, you know, the principles and the sub-principles in terms of how you're choosing to do things, you know, like, go back to what I say all the time, the game is only going to give you so many outcomes. You're only going to see so many things. And like I said, you know, fundamentally for me, the game is based on patterns. Now, those patterns, all you've got to do is familiarise yourselves with those patterns and ask yourself, right, where do you want to inform that? So we talk about game on. How do I typically want my teams to play when I coach a team, sorry? And I've always kind of left it kind of open in possession, but I've got a very clear idea of what I want it to look like out of possession typically. But again, that's fundamentally dictated by what the opposition are doing and how we choose to kind of operate against that. Now, then I look, right, what are the player profiles? What are the roles and responsibilities in each area of the pitch? And within that, I've then got to ask myself, right, at what level am I working at? One, can I coach the players to get to that point that I'm looking for? Have I got the makeup in the group? Now, sometimes that in a grassroots environment or in a lower level environment, you might have to consider, right, roles and responsibilities of players. There might be one position, but they've got the characteristics and the abilities that you might want to see utilized in another area of the pitch based on how you want your team to play. In which case, can you use those as core things to kind of develop your game model and get closer to what you want the players to do aligned to that? Then I think, you know, how much is it needed, right? So in creating that game model, do we just start with making sure that we get the first layer right? And once we've understood what the first layer is, i.e. we've got them to have a good understanding of the principles of the game and the purpose behind it, and that's the driving force of what we're going after, then do we start to layer on the other bits about how we want them to do it? And then obviously, I think the biggest thing beyond that is you can develop the game model, you can create the game model, but it's about implementing the game model, right? So how do you make sure that it's stuff that can be transferable to the players from theory to practical elements? And then you look at that and you say, what am I prioritizing? So you've got your principles in there, but sometimes you might need to address something else before we get to the idea of what you want the game model to look like. Those are just some initial thoughts, kind of just brainstorming my idea. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
No, I don't necessarily disagree. I think when I look at the game, it's important that coaches have an identity in how they want to play. Now, arguably, a lot of coaches say they do, but they probably don't. Because when it comes to a game, what they're doing in training, how does that relate to how you want to play? I think there's a few where, you know, we often talk about this a lot, like, we'll design practices, but it's, hang on a minute, if your centre-back did that on a Sunday, would you be happy? You know, or if your right winger got the ball and did this on a weekend, would you be happy? And if the answer's no, then why are you letting them do that? So I very much want a very clear identity in how we play. And I think the game model's important because even with grassroots kids, if it's for us as coaches, so that we understand ourselves, like, right, when we've got the ball, we're looking at this. We want our teams to do this. We want our teams to break lines. We want our teams to make movements, to receive them. We're looking for X, Y, Z. And then, obviously, how do you simplify that for the players is the key, of course, you know. But I think for the coaches, it can help us have clarity. You know, I think when I first started coaching, I used to put on some great sessions, and you're probably like a really good session coach, but then what's the connection to a match? And then when you're thinking about the game, like, you know, we talk about roles and responsibilities, positional responsibilities, whatever, that's great, but actually, can we create an environment where our players know that when we've got the ball, we're looking for these solutions here? Now, it's not patterned in the sense of being restrictive, but players are given the freedom that they know. Like, for example, I'm coaching a game shortly, right? The U12s, when you watch them play, they move the ball. They'll play 1-2s in the 6-yard box, Yaz. They'll move the ball where the centre-back will step into midfield and he'll create overloads. And then someone might drop in. There'll be times where in animation, you know, they play 9-a-side, so typically your starting shape is a 3-4-1, let's say, a 1-3-4-1. But you want to see them because actually, when we've got the ball, there's times where there's only one at the back just because we're dominating what we're doing. So, you know, I would say that, and for other people, I've seen us, like, when we win the ball, recognising, like, pressures, when to press high, when to drop off, how to create a set traps. And I think people often go like, oh, man, you must have drilled these kids. No, we actually haven't. What we've done is we work on principles where we exploit space. So we talk a lot about, you know, dribble when you can, pass when you must. So if he's free, if Yaz is in a position where he should get the ball, give him the ball. But if you've got space to take a player on, go take him on. Attack the space with speed. So dribble when you can, pass when you must. We'll use phrases like, how can your pass or your dribble eliminate two or more defenders? Show us. Don't tell me, show me. And then a lot of the environment is pretty much where kids are constantly looking to break lines, whether it's with a pass, whether it's with a run, whatever it is. They're looking. So in animation, it's almost like playing little mini five-a-sides all over the pitch in 3v3s, 2v2s. And people often go, God, I can't tell what formation you're playing. Yeah, because our principles are that when we've got the ball, we want our kids to not be restricted on, like, I'm the number three, so I can only do this, or I'm the centre-back, I can only defend. Like, I'm watching one game now, I don't know what team it is, it's on another field, But you can clearly see that there's lines. Do you know what I mean, Yaz? I can see the back three. I can see the midfield. I can see the attack. And they don't move. It's almost like there's invisible constraints, invisible walls that restrict players. Whereas, you know, I'm almost, and again, this might not be everyone's model, but it should be that, hey, we're playing the game because it's an invasion sport. How you interact with space, how you exploit space. So why don't we get our kids really good at moving the ball? And by the way, we had a game yesterday, and this was like a division whatever team. It was low division. And it was grassroots and people going, oh, God, you know, they looked awesome. And they thought they were better than they were. And we're like, no, these are actually like one of the, you know, weaker teams. But it's just because they're confident at trying things with the ball. And they're organised and they're really hard to play against when we haven't got the ball. And that's almost like little rules. Now, the game model for the coach is more complex, right? There's more layers. Maybe to your point, Yaz, the simplification for the players, the transfer to the field is that we're giving them these clear, like, expectations, these objectives. Hey, when we've got the ball, our mission today is this. When we haven't got the ball, our mission today is this. And I think that's how you can develop players to operate within a framework. The question I've got for you is, and this is for the room as well, is with the game model, do we want a game model that's rigid? Or do we want a game model that's flexible where players can adapt because the principles don't change? We can call them whatever we want, but the principles don't change. But they're able to interact with the environment and solve their own problems. Because I'd probably lean more towards the latter. I'd be interested to know what you think.
Sorry, just clarify what the question was again. Sorry.
I was going to ask for you, because a lot of people talk about game models and they're pretty strict, aren't they? They're like, this is my game model. This is how my team's going to play. And we're not changing. Whereas I'm saying, actually, should it be that the game model is flexible? So it's your set of principles, but it offers flexibility within the framework. So I'm curious what your thoughts are, because that's where my bias is. It's more that, hey, we've got these labels, but how the players interpret it and how they act upon it is up to them. I'm not going to say they can only attack in this way or defend in this way.
No, I think I'm with you on that one. I think it's definitely the latter. I think it's got to be that you can have a way you want to play, but fundamentally, like I said, the game is going to dictate what you're going to do. And if you're stubborn in that kind of idea that you don't think the game is going to dictate what you're going to do, you're probably going to get caught out a few times more than you want. Because fundamentally, like I said, the game will dictate what you're going to do. Like if you want to play out from the back, but I'm a team that likes to play in a low block, well, you're not really playing out from the back. You're not going to break through my press. You're still going to have to play through me, and that's, you know, penetrating the final third by, you know, combining or going through me or in any way, shape or form, right? Whereas if I do press you high, you might be able to play it from the back, but equally you might just smack it over the whole block and go in behind. But that's what the game's going to ask you to do. So I think you know you've got to be open-minded to understand that you're never going to create a model that's just going to be completely flawless. It's not going to happen, because the game will dictate what you want to do at the end of the day. And I think if coaches start to understand, hey, this is how we want to play, and probably ask the question of what will allow this way of playing to exist as a primary kind of or an ideal way of playing. But in any case, if that doesn't exist, then we can't play that way. So what we'll, you know, it goes back to that whole concept of what if, right? So I've got my what. I know what I want to do. I want the team to be able to play like. I know how I want that to look. But that can only happen if the opposition do X, Y, Z. But if the opposition decide they're going to do A, B, C instead, well, we can't play.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Play that way anymore, because our way of playing is dictated by that. So I think there's definitely got to be some flexibility. I think there's definitely got to be an element of, you know, a key thing being within the game model, an articulation that this is just an expression of what the principles could look like in practice and not the only way that they will look like in practice. Because if they understand the principles, in my opinion, and they understand the way that you want to go about achieving those principles, then equally they'll also be able to have enough understanding to know what it should or could look like when that situation doesn't present itself, if that makes sense. So I think from that perspective, yeah, you've got to be flexible, you've got to be adaptable to what the game is asking you to do, but then also recognizing that, well, what happens when, you know, you're looking to play a game that's based on putting the ball in behind the opposition's high line, but you've no longer got that quick forward that can get on the win, get in the end of it, or you haven't got any players that are willing to make those runs in behind. You're midway through the game, you've had to make a sub or two subs, and now you've lost your two quickest wingers who like to go in behind. Now, all of a sudden, what does that mean? You're going to have to change your game model. In which case, then I start to go back to question, well, why do you have one in the first place if the game's going to dictate what you're able to do based on what the opposition do, but what your players are capable of also. So, yeah, I know, bit of a rant, really, but I think it's just, yeah, it'd be interesting to get your thoughts on that, but also just to remind everyone that, you know, this is a big
CD. You can have one, but it's making sure that we're not tied to it. Like, ultimately, the model should be there to serve, to provide us a guide for how we view actions in the game. And then ultimately help give the coach just a clear clarity. Like, if I'm looking at some of the staff, like today, breaking lines to advance the ball, what does that look like? And how does that change and look differently based on the age and stage? You know, if it's 7v7, 9v9, or finishing the attack. So I look at the 7v7 game I coached earlier today. You know, the girl is taking 5-6 touches, dribbling the ball. Not sure. And to dribble and shoot. But that's their game, isn't it? Like, you think at 7-a-side, U9, and they're dribbling. They get a little bit closer to the goal and they finish. Sometimes they finish early, but most of the time it's those actions. Whereas 9-a-side, it's different. If you look at the top level and an adult, you might be finishing with one touch or a two touch finish max. So I think it's understanding that where they are and how do we use that to help us have clarity in what we're expecting from the players. But also when we're coaching them and going, okay, today I'm really shining a light on this. I'm spending more time working on these principles. But if we design a realistic environment, everything should come out.
So I guess, you know, in essence, what you're saying there is, what are the constants that we can get in from day one? And what are the layers that start to come in based on how the game changes, right? So as an example, a prime example is, 7v7, under 10s, no heading. 9v9, pitches are bigger, wider, goals are bigger, wider. Now we might introduce some crossing and some heading involved in the curriculum based on how we want to play, right? So I think it's just looking at developing that as the game goes on. What are the constants throughout the ages and stages is where my mind goes with that. But I think, in short, understand that the principles will come above all else. Have a method in which you want to demonstrate those principles to come out for your teams and your players, and make sure that they are understanding their roles and responsibilities and how those messages, or rather those principles, need to be enacted to achieve success, but also what the situations are that need to present themselves in order for that to exist. And equally, just as important, understanding the what-ifs behind it. So if there's a situation that needs to exist for your game model to be enacted, if you like, then what's the situation that's going to cause it to be different? So that's where I'm thinking in terms of where you need to start with developing this game model piece and the language attached to it. And how do you articulate the messages behind what you're trying to go after? You know, little things. Just as you were speaking, I was thinking about some of the key phrases and terms, and I often use with players when I work with them, and it's almost. I use a phrase. Can you commit and then play? I'm big on the idea of players really drawing in the opposition before releasing the ball. Similar to kind of what what's his name again? I can't remember his name. Paul McGinnis. Apologies. Name skip me for a second. So Paul McGinnis talks a lot about, you know, getting close to the fire as you can without getting burnt. right? The same concept. But for me, I just call it commit and play. How close can you get to your position before you release the ball? And that's just a general principle that we want to drill through that throughout the whole team, regardless of what age and stage they are, right? And as they develop, it's now, right, what does commit and play actually look like at different stages? What are we committing? What are we committing for? And what is the play going to look like? Are we committing to play a dribble, a pass, or a shot? In which case, obviously, that would direct and guide what the commit and play might look like in that form. But like I said, I mean, I'm a lot more free on the in possession, and probably a lot more focused on the out of possession, in the sense that, you know, I'd like to have a very organized team out of possession as a foundation for anything else. But again, I'm just brainstorming some ideas that are coming to mind. I'm thinking out loud as you speak, and these are some of the things that come to mind. So I guess, you know, my question for you now would be, we've gone through some different considerations where to start. If coaches are walking away from this, what are some questions that you want them to start to think about around how they actually want that game model to look like?
Well, I think the first of all is it's clarity in your language. So, like, I know you've used penetration, right? I'll talk about breaking lines. People say counter-pressing. People say, well, what does that mean? You know, I gave the example years ago. I was at head of coaching and coach came up to me. It was under-16s coach. And said, oh, you're going to love the session tonight. We've been working on counter-pressing for 6 weeks. Oh, brilliant. Okay, I'm excited. And what I should have done, which I do now, I should have said, hey, show me your session plan. At the top of the episode, just for my clarity, what do you mean by counter-pressing? I didn't do that. And I didn't do it because I'd only just started. I didn't want to be too intense, but I probably should have. And anyway, I was watching the session and I was like, well, man, there's not much counter-pressing going on. And then I asked him, I said, hey, what do you mean by counter-pressing? And long story short, I asked him, the players, the under-18s coaches on that one. Every one of us had a different definition for what counter-pressing is. So I thought, well, what chance have we got? Like, we're trying to assess players and we're judging players on the performance, but how can you judge them if they're, you know, we're not measuring from the same sheet? So I would say that's a big one, is clarity in the language, the vocabulary that you use. And then can you use language that's easily understood by players? And there's an importance of using game language, like industry language, but there's also no harm in having players co-design the language, you know, or players saying, hey, we would call this. Well, that's okay. Like, you know, they can do that.
Okay, so you're getting them to design the language. Now, I'm just thinking, well, what happens if everyone comes up with very different opinions, right? Because obviously, you can't have a too long, too extended, drawn-out process on this. Otherwise, you get away.
You rein it in, but I think, as an example, like, I've heard people use the word sweaty, right, as a slang. Do you know what I mean, sweaty? It's like that FIFA term, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, I actually would say to him, hey, I want you to pull the ball back in this area. And I remember once, and this was at an academy in England, and the kid's like, pull back. I said, yeah, this is sweaty. He's like, oh, I got you. I was like, yeah. Now, I think that's okay. You know what I mean? Now, you can say pull back, I'm sweaty. You can, I think it's like, what I love, I'll use Jurgen Klopp as a good example. And I only know this because I worked with Harrison in Morocco and he showed me it. So they had the videos and they went through the language and they had certain trigger words that were one or two key words, but everyone instantly knew what it meant with the video and the visual. And I think what was powerful about that, especially if you work with kids who, and I'm doing this now, we've got kids who are Spanish and things like that. Not everyone might be speaking English. You know, it creates that visual. So that's what I would say.
No, I think it's brilliant. It's aligned to a lot of the stuff I do. I think, I've tweeted about this in the past few days as well. Like the importance of frameworks and visuals for players, because it's not just the messages that you know you can land with your words, but it's how do you land the message, just full stop. And as long as the players are picking it up, then, you know, it's a great way to go. So it's like you talk at the sort of top about the game model being a framework, but what are the frameworks within the framework, if you like? Yeah, what can you design for players to really latch onto the idea of what you're going after? And, you know, I'm big on the idea of show and tell. Don't just tell them what you want to see. Show them. Whether that's you demonstrating it, whether it's them walking through it, whether it's like you visualizing it for them through the form of images or videos. And, you know, it's how you land that message. So in terms of creating that game model piece, can you put it into a picture? Can you put it into a video? Can you describe and outline what it is that you actually want the players to do? And it might be based on drawn out examples from other areas of the game or other teams or whatnot. But these are the moments that you want them to be able to recreate, and I think that's a great place to start as well. Just conscious, Jared. Obviously, you know it's an FACPD part of our series as well around developing the game model. Maybe you just want to share a bit of insight on how people can access the CPD. If anyone's got any questions, they want to clarify or they want to get involved in the conversation in some way, then feel free to do so as well. And then obviously in the interim, I've also shared a link on my profile regarding the update, the upcoming webinar we've got next week as well on developing the game model. You there, Gerard?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, we're going to share the link at CPD events, and you've got access to basically getting an hour accreditation. And when we share the link as well, I want everyone just to think about what are the key takeaways for you. One thing I would say, just thinking about the game model, so it just popped into my head, is can you create something with your players that allows them to play and operate, and this is, I'm not trying to get fancy here, but it's just something that popped in my head, operate in their own genius. So often kids, for me, the players have the best decisions, don't they? They'll see things that we don't always see. Could we have a workshop with players and say, okay, when we've got the ball, a bit to your point, Yaz, piggybacking off what you just said then about the video and the visuals, watch games and go, okay, what could you do differently here? All right, if we've got that ball, how does that help us? How can we find the best out of our teammate? How do players play better with certain teammates so they know their teammates, you know, and that type of thing? So I think there's loads in here that really, it's a great opportunity. I'd love to hear from people as well. Like, what does it look like at Blackburn? I know we've got Manuel who's at Bradford Rovers Academy. What does it look like for Tony? What does it look like for different people? We've got head women's coach in the US, you know, what does it look like in your environments? And is it more prescribed or is it more free for the players to have ownership in what they think it looks like based on the players you've got? So I'm curious.
Yeah, I'm just conscious not everyone's going to be necessarily wanting to participate in a conversation tonight, so that's absolutely fine. But I think, Gerard, you know, let's just summarise some key messages that we look to wrap up then. For me, I think it's just, you know, having a clear understanding of how you want to do things and how they're kind of influenced and dictated by the principles of the game above all else. I think beyond that, it's also recognising that element of the age and stage. What are the constant messages that you can give right through the program? But Tony, we've got you in the call now. Go for it, man.
Good evening, everybody. I'm always interested when this sort of stuff comes up as a subject, because I actually wonder how much of it is kind of 21st century coaching, which hides behind education. You know, we've gone through the, you know, let the game be the teacher thing, and now we're talking about game model this and game model that. And I get that everybody would like to play out from the back and break lines and be all pretty, and we've gone through the tiki-taka thing with Barcelona. But I'm going to go back to Yaz's point earlier on, and I think it got mentioned last week as well. If the opposition don't let you play your game, you have got to have educated your players to find other solutions. There's got to be, you know, your education of your players has got to be so broad that actually having a game model might be doing them a disservice. You know, I'm working with someone in a mentoring capacity at the minute who sends me his session plans from he's going through the UEFA B process. And his session plans are longer than my book. And I don't, you know, I don't think that's his fault. I just think that that's, that, that there's an overcomplication of coaching that, that is really unnecessary.
Is it as simple as that, Tony? Because, you know, I sometimes question it myself. You know, are we just complicating things just for the sake of a new generation or just a change of times in how the game is being viewed? When really the game is just simple.
I mean, it is a really simple game. You know, we touch on it every week. Score at that end, defend at that end. That's as simple as the game is. And if my way of getting the ball from my goalkeeper to my centre-forward is for him to kick it 70 yards, who's to say that it's any worse than yours? OK, it doesn't develop all the players. I understand that. And I'm not saying that that's my way of playing, by the way. But I'm looking at the list of people that come on these spaces, right? And the great qualifications, great experience. Most, your point about demos earlier on, most of them look as though they could still turn in a decent demo when required. But actually, the coaches that need this level of education are the ones that aren't doing CPD, the ones that want to help out their Sunday morning teams, Saturday morning teams. And, you know, let's be honest, the majority of them are chasing plastic trophies at the end of the season. Have they got game models? I doubt if most of them know what a game model is, because, you know, you come on these things to get this education, but 99% of the time you're going to be preaching to the converted. So I do think that there's an overcomplication at times. You know, Gerard talks about, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and Gerard talks about principles and sub-principles. At times when people start doing that, it just puts me off. I just close it off. And I'm guessing that the majority of UEFA-C and coaches, for example, wouldn't have a clue when you start talking about principles and sub-principles. They just want their kids to play football. Some of the kids, and again, I've touched on this on these spaces before, some of the kids don't want to be coached. They just want to play football with their mates.
I think it's a great point, Tony. You know, we're slightly digressing, but I don't mind it because I think it's a point worth addressing. I put a message out earlier in the week, I think it was, and I said, a coach's job is to develop the players above all else. And there's no way that, there's no reason why that can't still be fun. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. If it's not fun, the kids aren't coming back. It's as simple as that, you know. It really is, you know, but there's no reason why whilst they're having fun, they can't be working productively. In fact, Thursday night this week, I had a session with my boys, under 14 boys. We had to train next to a pitch where there was a game going on. We've had rain all week, so the ground was really sodden. We didn't have a great deal of space. And, you know, at the end of it, the kids had been what I would say that they were messing about, that we're playing a game, a small-sided game, but the kids were just messing about, sliding in the mud and seeing how dirty they could get and all that kind of thing. And I said to them at the end, look, I don't mind you having a laugh, and I want you to enjoy what you're doing. But that's not productive, you know, and there's no point in me giving them a bollocking and making them run laps of the pitch or run up and down the hill, because nobody gets anything from that. So, yeah, 100% it's got to be fun. But at the same time, you've got to make sure that there's an educational element in it most of the time.
Apologies. Question, why did you say most and not all of the time?
With regards to fun?
Well, with regards to the educational element, more specifically, because I'm thinking about it, well, you know, there should be an educational element all the time, because, like I said, I think the skill of the coach is to engage the players in, well, design activities or practices which are engaging for the players in a way that you can still help them develop. So there's that educational element is forefront of what everything that we're doing, but it's underpinned by the fun element of what we're doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think for me, I think that there's times when you can relax that side of it. Just a personal opinion. I think that there's times when, for whatever reason, it could be numbers, it could be space, it could be equipment, it could just be you. Where actually, you know, let's be honest. A lot of coaches are going to come from work. Whatever stresses and strains that brings, they've committed to take the kids for coaching that night, and they've either not had time to plan, or they didn't want to plan, or they might be feeling a little bit down themselves, where they just play. And I don't think that that should be underestimated. I don't think it should happen all the time, but I do think there's going to be occasions when the coach can facilitate and observe. They might throw in the odd coaching point, but it would be much less constrained. It would be much less directed.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I mean, I've got a slightly different opinion, but I think that's the beauty of this stuff, isn't it? We've all got different outlooks on how the coaching should look and what the outcome should be. But no, some good stuff. Tony, I want to say a massive thank you for obviously getting involved. Obviously, Gerard's had to shoot off, guys, just so you're aware. But just a reminder, this is an FACPD. You can get an hour's CPD accredited for yourself. I will post the link shortly, in which you can click on. Just click that link and just be aware that it can take up to 4 to 6 weeks for your hours to be updated on there. But we have got an upcoming webinar, which I've just posted on my profile as well. So please keep an eye out for that. And we'll be back next week, Sunday, for the final part of this Spaces series around developing the game, and we'll be talking about how you articulate it. So yeah, make sure you're following us, both myself, Gerard, and obviously Tony. Thank you again for your participation tonight. Everyone else that's been involved, even just as observers and listeners, you know, the support is much appreciated. But keep joining us, keep following us, stay in touch with us, let us know your thoughts on what we've discussed so far, and if there's any future topics that you want to hear discussed on the show, then please do let us know as well. But until next time, guys, have a great evening. Take care, and we'll be back next week. Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.